This is Nash with Radio Dead Air, and I've been given a few minutes to talk with Robert Llewellyn of Junkyard Wars, or actually Scrappy Challenge, and Red Dwarf fame. Robert, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. No, it's great to be here.
Okay. You got started in acting pretty much as a hobby for you, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, I kind of fell into it by accident. I was always wanted to write. I was writing for other comedians, writing comedy plays and sketches, and eventually ended up in the sketches, which was I didn't want to do. I was kind of bullied into it by the guys I was working with. Really frightened, had no stage skills, hadn't been to drama school, didn't want to do it, didn't want to be on stage, didn't want people looking at me. Did one show in London, this is like the late 1970s, and people laughed. And if they hadn't laughed that one night, I would never have done it again. And it was because it was the most terrifying night of my life. But I got the bug, and I suddenly realized that there was something I could do that, you know, was above and beyond writing. So,
and you were doing that for a while. You went along, and then Paul Jackson spotted you. Why don't you tell us how you fell into Red Dwarf there?
Well, I did it, strangely, following the same tradition. I wrote a play for two actors that I really admired, a black American actress called Deborah John Wilson, and an English actor, who then suddenly got a part in a at that time, a soap opera. It's since come off the air. And he dumped me, like, right at the last minute. We had 2 weeks before we opened at the Edinburgh Festival, the Fringe Festival in Scotland. And the only person who knew the part... And it was that my whole ambition was to write and direct this play and not be in it. You know, I'd done a lot of performing by then, but I wanted to be an auteur, writer, director with mad hair and, you know... Oh, man. So I was so pissed off. It was a question of, do we cancel it or do I do it? And I did it in the end. And that's what Paul Jackson saw me in that play. It was a huge success. Against all my expectations, I was dreading going. I thought it was going to be a disaster. It just caught hold at that show. It was sold out. It won prizes. It was, you know, a very exciting thing to do. Plus, the actual show itself was commissioned as a TV series, which never came to be, but it went through that process. And in the meantime, Paul Jackson, who was, you know, he was a very powerful man in British telly, kept hassling me to get a ticket, and I couldn't get him a ticket. It was so sold out. And eventually, I mean, he sat on the side of the stage on a chair we put out for him, because the only way he could see it, and it was fantastic. He's an amazing man, and he then talked me into doing Red Dwarf, and I initially said no. I said, no, I don't want, I mean, by then I was very busy doing other things, and I went, oh, I'm not sure I've got time, and, you know, boy, I'm so glad I did say yes.
Had you been watching the show up till then?
I'd seen one episode, because I was on stage every night, so it was very hard, and in those days, pre-DVDs, pre-VHS tape, you know, I didn't tape stuff, if you weren't in the house when it was on, you didn't see it. So I'd seen one episode, and I knew Norman Lovett very well. I'd done lots of shows with him. I'd met Craig, but I didn't know him that well. So I kind of was aware of it, but only in the real peripheral. And then I met the two writers, and immediately I met them. I really joined. I went, these guys
Doug
are...
And Grant.
Yeah, Rob Grant and Doug Naylor. And they're such amazing brains and such amazing guys. And also the director, Ed Bye, who I still work with now, who's... amazing. So when I met them, I went, oh, I see. All right, yeah.
So there wasn't any trouble falling into the ensemble. You just...
No, not at all, really. I mean, they were... and I think, in a sense, I was sort of pre-trained. I'd done a lot of shows with a group of four guys, in fact, a comedy group for years. So I kind of come of age and learnt how to work in an ensemble cast, which I love doing. I mean, I'm not very keen on being a stand-up comic, although I have done it. I love working with other people like that, and that was pretty much instantaneous, sort of fitting in with them. They're just such fun to work with. I mean, everyone takes the mickey out of everyone else. Everyone's, so no one is picked on.
No, we've seen the scenes.
I mean, if they didn't take the piss out of you, you'd feel depressed, you know, because you'd be left out.
Yeah, and you actually got an interesting experience in Red Dwarf. Not many actors get to do. You got to write for your own character.
Yeah, that was very, very hard. That was series 7. So, I mean, by then I'd been doing it a few years. And that was when all the writing changed, and Rob Grant left, and Doug carried on, and he got other writers in. So I did write one episode, but it was the toughest thing I wrote. The very first version I wrote was, I think, I, without blowing my own trumpet, it was very, very funny, but it wasn't Red Dwarf. It was a very funny show about Craig Charles, Chris Barry, Danny John Jules, Robert Llewellyn, you know, in costume. So it was like, it wasn't the show. It was amazing. It was a subtle difference. And they, when we read through it, they all loved it. They all thought it was great. But it wasn't Red Dwarf. Yeah. And so that was, out of all the scripts I've written, and I've written a lot, that was the most rewrites. I think 32 rewrites before we got, you know, it just went on and on. And sometimes throw the whole thing away and start again. But the bit that is genuinely mine in that script, which is in series 7, it's called Beyond a Joke, is sort of the very beginning and the very end. The very beginning bit, which is when we go into Jane Austen world and all that stuff. That was my dig at costume drama.
What was it like when you went to them and said, okay, we're going to need a tank for this script?
Well, because Doug said, just think big. And I said, well, I'd love to use a tank. And he went, what do you mean? I said, well, I think we should have a tank that blows up Jane Austen world. And it was that kind of mad conversation that we did. And I went, yeah, but, you know, then we'll change it and it'll be a bicycle. But then we found, you know, then the day we got the tank, it was just a T-72 tank, fresh from Russia.
And everybody probably had fun playing with that thing.
That was amazing. Well, we shot that on an army base, a British army base where they train soldiers. And normally when you do it, because we did the explosion of the Mr. Bingley's gazebo with all the nice ladies in it having tea. And normally you do that, they use flash powder and petrol, and they get it. So it doesn't make any noise, but it looks spectacular. Well, the army were there, and they said, we'll give you some Semtex ribbon, which, you know, high explosive ribbon they used to blow up bridges. They gave us something like 20 meters of Semtex ribbon, which is lethally dangerous, but they were really into it. And so Mr. Bingley's gazebo just turned into a very large hole in the ground in a quarter of a second. We broke windows in a local housing project nearby. We blew the trees down. It was terrifying, absolutely phenomenal explosion. Which is very, we were very lucky because all the soldiers really into Red Dwarf. They were so thrilled we were there. You know, we had a tank. You know, it was all great fun.
Well, that's good. That's something leads me into what I want to ask you about next. Why do you think this series has kept such an enduring fandom even after being gone for 10 years?
It is mysterious because, I mean, now I'm meeting, like, my son, he's 14. He's just literally this year got, he's, you know, he came on the set when he was a little kid. And so he's been aware of it, but he's just now, he's turned a point where he's suddenly watched one of them, our DVDs at home, and he really, I just walked past his room one day, and he was laughing and laughing and laughing, and he was watching Red Dwarf. And it's like a whole new, and all his mates have now suddenly, well, most of those kids were toddlers when we were making it. And there's a whole new generation who've started watching it long time since we've made it. And I've met a 9-year-old kid recently in England who's obsessed with it, loves it, it's got all the DVDs. He wasn't born when we made it, you know. It is extraordinary, but it's generally their parents will have had it and they've sort of passed it down. It is. I think it's because it's universal and it touches on very simple human frailties in a very funny way, you know, in an unusual situation. But it's very universal. It's very unexclusive. It's very, you don't have to be into sci-fi to appreciate it. If you are into sci-fi, you still appreciate it. So it doesn't make fun of sci-fi. And it's got a good science fiction heart. You know, it's genuine science fiction. So it's not like making cheap jokes. You know, it is science fiction reality, effectively. And we played it for real. I mean, we, you know.
Now, a little bird called the internet told me something. I have to ask you about this one because everybody's been buzzing about this since you. Last week in Seattle, you had a little bit of an announcement.
Yeah, I did. It was very amusing. I was given explicit permission from the producers to announce that we had received a commission to make a one-hour special. Of Red Dwarf for the original cast, etc., etc. I genuinely don't know what form it will take. I haven't seen a script or anything. And that was fine, and so I did that. And then immediately I received rather a lot of email because it spread that news. I knew it would, and I did tell them. You know, I said, it's possible more people than just those who live in Seattle will find this out.
Do you know they're already discussing putting the DVD of that interview out for sale with that just because...
That's just extraordinary. That is it's terrifying, really. But, I mean, it is wonderful. I mean, it's great news. We're so thrilled that it's happening. But anyway, I've then, since then been told not to say anything, so I'm not saying anything.
Okay, nothing more than what's already kind of out there. Well, Robert Llewellyn, it has been a pleasure talking with you today. This is Nash the Radio Dead Air. We've been speaking with Robert Llewellyn of Red Dwarf. Thank you. I hope you have a good con.
Thanks very much indeed. Thank you.